But welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, we want to move on from the conversation about abortion for now. But before we went to break, and I wanted to give you a chance to answer, I said that in black communities, it has been long thought that
You were suggesting that it was basically designed to make sure that the white population didn't slow down its growth rate through the vehicle of chosen ends to pregnancy.
And yet in the black community, there's always been the push for making sure that these young people took contraceptives. It's always been major, because there was a time, maybe 20 years ago, that the teenage pregnancy in the black community was really, overwhelming.
Yeah.
That has long since come under control. But what are your thoughts about that?
Well, the data is just confusing, and it's complicated, because the percentage of black women who have abortions as a percentage of black women is appreciably higher than the percentage of white women who have abortions. But there are so many more white women than there are black women that when you measure who comprises the population of people who have abortions, there are many more white women that have abortions than black women. So its impact on the growth rate of a population cohort is a little bit unclear. But everything, you can connect the dot backwards and decide that it was done purposefully. I mean, people have long connected the dots backward and said that the Catholic Church's opposition to contraception and abortion has the ultimate bottom line effect of creating many more Catholics. I guess the Mormon Church has the same kind of rules as well, in terms of their liturgical principles on this kind of an issue. And is that why they have the rule, or is that a coincidence? I'm not sure. I do think that back in the day when Planned Parenthood in particular, I was on the board of it a long time ago, was very interested in helping spread contraception as a purposeful way of avoiding unwanted pregnancies. I don't think it was intended on a racial basis, but I think that there's no question that in a population where there is a significant percentage of teenage surprise pregnancies, it is a problem for that teenage woman. It is a problem for society in terms of having a child brought into society that has a difficult source of care. So I'm not sure the purpose was venal, but I can understand why people would connect the dots and think it could have been racial.
All right, so let's move on from there. And at the same time, we have this debate and argument about abortion. Child care providers plan to shut down May 9th to demand federal help. Monday's protests will come at a time when the political prospects for the Democratic legislation are fading. What legislation? So under Joe Biden,
I think it's the
Build Back Better plan.
Yeah, I think it's that Build Back Better plan that had child care, daycare, the credit.
It had the child, which you have been talking about ever since I first met you.
I'm not as much of a fan of the tax credit as I am of actual child daycare programs and child preschool education programs.
You've been a supporter of that since I first met you. And here's what is being said by those who run those programs. Officials from Community Change, the progressive grassroots group leading the effort, told the Huffington Post nearly 300 providers from 25 states have already signed up to be part of what they are calling a Day Without Child Care National Day of Action. In a conference call on Thursday, several of the participating providers talked about their plights as they try to stay in business at a time when they can't pay enough to attract and keep workers, and when they can't ask families to pay more because so many parents already struggle with child care's high costs. We can no longer afford to wait, says Britannia Bays, a provider from West Texas who will be closing her doors on Monday and helping to lead a march at the Texas State Capitol in Austin. Our families are out of options. It feels like we all know that child care is essential, but it's time for the world to feel what it's like to get to go a day without child care right now to prevent it from becoming our permanent reality. Sandy, you know, you and I were talking earlier, and I mentioned we're able to organize all these people for abortions and all of those things. We can't get people to organize, you know, for an issue that I think is, I'm not going to say just as important, but it's got to be right up there.
Well, it's got to be as important, I think, because once a child is brought into this world, they didn't choose to get born, right?
Right.
So the child is the child born is the victim of a process in which they played no role. It was passive. They were conceived, and once they're brought into this world, we've got to assure the birthright for that child. And that's what I've been talking about lately, is this concept of every child born in this country ought to have a birthright that provides them a great opportunity to potentially succeed, okay? And part of that involves child daycare, particularly in an economy which has been converted from the economy you and I grew up with in right. as children, where there was a single breadwinner and someone could stay home with and be a daycare provider. Yeah. It was the mother or the father.
Right.
In today's world, the majority of households involve two income earners because of the economics of the world. And when you have two breadwinners and you have children, you need daycare. Okay, and without daycare, particularly amongst the poor, where it's even more necessary that you have two breadwinners, this birthright requires that we provide adequate daycare to young children and also preschool education, and it's terribly important. I mean, once the child is conceived and born, why do we not provide as much political attention to that baby and providing for all its needs as we've attended to this question of a fetus, you know, whether a fetus is entitled to be born? And if we could harness all the political energy that was focused on this abortion issue and harness it and focus it on children and the welfare of children, we'd have no trouble getting child daycare.
You know, Sandy, it's the hypocrisy in the pro-life debate. You know, if all of these people can mobilize and say, yeah, bring the child in and not care about what happens to the child, which clearly is the case, is here, that's hypocrisy at the highest level. But not only is it hypocrisy, Sandy, it is the recipe for what ails this country. When we talk about, you know, wayward children, when we talk about, you know, crime, when we talk about all those things, at the root of it is the fact that we don't do anything to prevent those things from happening. We want to rally more officers, more law enforcement, when that's short-sighted.
Right. Well, I mean, I think when this pro-life person is on next Wednesday for you, you ought to address the question with them. Okay, let's assume that pro-life becomes the law of the land and all children conceived are carried through to birth. Now are you going to focus all of your political attention on making sure that that child born gets a full and equal birthright to try and succeed? And that means child daycare, that means preschool education, that means quality education from the get-go, and free education. It means good health care. Are you willing to put your political shoulder behind those issues? Because if we're going to say that all children have to be born, now we ought to focus on what are we going to do for all these children? And I don't mean all children should be born. I mean all children, all conceived.
I know exactly what you
potential
mean.
Children.
So the other part of this, Sandy, is Joe Biden and the Build Back Better plan was almost there. And yes, Joe Manchin, people can say, well, one guy stopped it. One guy didn't stop it, because no Republican voted yay.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So we can't just, and I'm hearing people say, well, Joe Manchin stopped. I'm saying, like, no, it wasn't one guy. And it's almost like people saying, well, this is a Democratic thing. Aren't Republican children, don't they have to have the exact same thing? This is not about Democrat and Republican. It's about what's better for the individual child in long term, what's in the best interest of our nation.
Well, and in fact, if we had the values that other countries have, people wouldn't be so focused on whether their children had this opportunity. They'd be focused on the community of children in which they live, and do all in our community have this opportunity? And we as a country should be interested in that, because the quality of our lifestyle, the quality of our environment, the quality of our economy will be enhanced and leavened by the notion that every child has the opportunity to succeed, to participate.
You know, Sandy, I don't know, it just appears that somewhere along the line, the opportunity was there. It was missed. And I'm afraid that if Republicans take over the House, the chance that was there is now gone. And that this won't come around for, you know, a long time to come.
You're talking about the chance for child-related focused problem. Well, I have programs. Well, I think that might be right, but I think this is up to the Democratic Party to decide that they're going to create a focal point for the issues that they're going to address, instead of using this scattergun approach to addressing every form of liberal knee-jerk. They need to develop a program and a focal point, a priority, and a theme. And to me, the best theme would be this child birthright theme, because it incorporates child daycare, it incorporates education, it incorporates health care, it incorporates almost all of the safety net issues that we're looking for.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. Sandy, you know, we still, if you listen to the debates on what are the most critically important issues of the time, if you listen to people on the right, they are saying, for the most part, it's the border issue. It's the border issue. It's the border issue. Well, here's an article that says in today's Newsweek, the U.S. will need immigrant workers in the years to come as the country's aging workforce and increasing health care service needs contribute to an expected surge in job openings, according to a report released this week by the American Immigration Council. The U.S. Census Bureau has identified 2030 as the country's demographic turning point, with all Americans in the baby boomer generation and about one in five Americans overall will have reached retirement age. That is also the year that the Census Bureau says that immigration is projected to overtake natural population increases within the U.S. Only about one in five immigrant workers in the U.S. will have reached retirement age by 2030, according to the AIC's report. An estimated 17% of U.S. civilian workforce was foreign-born in 2020. Sandy, what is that picture painting?
Well, you know, they've often ignored the fact that the immigrants of this country end up working and paying taxes and are a considerable source of tax revenue for the country. They are not probably a considerable source at this point of expenditures on the part of this country. Many of them, the ones that are illegal that everyone is so worried about,
don't get any benefits. Right.
And they do pay taxes because they can pay taxes without a Social Security number. But in any case, I think the data would definitely show that the indigenous population, and by indigenous I don't mean Native American,
right,
I mean the population of non-immigrant Americans, is not growing demographically, and growth in this country has long been materially provided by immigrants, and the cutting off of immigrants is in many ways cutting off our nose despite our face. As I was driving here today, I was kind of shaking my head, realizing that as far as I know, every road that could be under construction is under construction simultaneously right now. We've got more and more. We've got so many people employed in the construction industry associated with road rebuilding that it's clear that we have a very hot economy looking, and we've got an economy of businesses looking for employees to fulfill the jobs for all the business that's available to them. You need only go to a restaurant these days to find out that many of them point out that they're closed on Sunday for want of staffing, for instance. And we've got continual staffing shortages all across the board, particularly in areas of manual labor. And so who has it that has always been the source of manual labor in this country? Significantly, it's been immigrants.
So it's short-sightedness on the side of those who want to continue to say, and nobody's saying, we have an immigration system that is slow moving, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's impossible to move and increase the immigration system without investing more money into that system. Right? I mean, to expand it.
Yeah, and I've had difficulty understanding because, as far as I know, the right that is alleging that there were a significant voting fraud, but they've never explained what the voting fraud was. That same group of people says that there's a significant immigration problem, but I've never heard them describe what the immigration problem is. The only thing that I've heard used that has basically been fuel politically is the notion, which is also not based on fact and is contrary to fact, that somehow immigrants are a significant source of crime, drugs and crime in this country. It is true that many drugs come across the border in this country, but I don't think it's at all been established that a significant percentage of immigrants have anything whatsoever to do with the drug trade, and it's never been established that the immigrants of this country are less law-abiding than the people who live here and natively and were born here. In fact, I think the data shows that immigrants are more law-abiding than the people born in America.
So let's take that drug aspect of it and just, kind of look at that. You can't tell me that, again, immigrants coming here, many of them, especially at the border, many of them from Central America, overwhelmingly living the life of Riley because they're in their mansions and driving their recreational vehicles.
Because they're in the drug trade.
That's correct.
Yeah,
if you look at who's really taking advantage of that, it's Americans who are getting wealthy and rich off of that. But who's saying that?
Well, what bothers me is that we have all these unsubstantiated claims that are related to these primary gut issues that the right is talking about. When CJ calls up, he wants to talk about immigration being a serious problem.
Right.
And I'm surprised that he's not talking more about voter fraud. Both of these things are totally unsubstantiated factual problems.
Well, you hear them say, well, the Democrats want all of them to come here because they're going to vote Democrat. They don't have any reference whatsoever to say that those people are coming here and that they're voting Democrat. But they've got people who believe that, like you said, without any facts whatsoever to back it up.
Well, I think you'd find that immigrants come here and after their second or third generation, the demographics of how they vote becomes very much like the demographics of how Americans vote generally. Yeah. And so, there already is a trend in the Latino side,
a trend toward conservative.
So this is all, and if that's their problem, then that's the same kind of problem that's leading to gerrymandering. And what is the issue other than party power rather than some social problem that's a significant problem worthy of a great deal of political attention?
You know, we've got to go to a break. We'll come to the phone lines after the break. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
Yeah, that word was
unsubstantiated. I think you conjured up CJ. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And Tom is back. Tom, you say what?
Yeah, I always have to start with we the people are the government ultimately, and I'm a proud FDR Democrat. I just have a question for people like CJ and people that are on the conservative side. I wish I could actually have a one-on-one dialogue with some of these people. You're in Wisconsin. How the hell does the border affect you like it does maybe for someone in California? Geographically, you're not anywhere near a border for this to be your number one issue, which tells me that you're getting all of your talking points from Fox. Can someone explain to me how it is that immigration has so much to do for people who live in the Midwest? And I mean, unless you're talking about Canada, immigrants coming, but I don't think that's who they're talking about. Why is this such a bugaboo to these guys, you know, that first they have to get across the border here, our border, in San Diego area, and then what, they're going to travel all the way to Wisconsin? I'm confused.
Sandy?
Well, that's a good point. That's my point before. I don't think that the people who talk about immigration have ever done a job of explaining what the immigration problem is. Just like they've never explained what the voter fraud has been. It's just it's a rallying point, and I think the immigration issue is really just a dog whistle for tribalism. And so you're absolutely right. But people should be asked to put some meat on the bone in terms of explaining what it is they're so worried about.
You know, Sandy, I want to move on to this. Another article that I was looking at the other day. You have been talking about our relationship with China, and how since Donald Trump, that relationship that was pretty good under President Obama. It was clearly decent under the Bushes,
yeah,
under Bill Clinton. It was a growing relationship with our nation and China. And Donald Trump came in, and clearly, I didn't say that we always agreed on everything, but wouldn't you say that we had a pretty decent relationship?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing is the biggest problem that was identified with China was the fact that they had a significant surplus in the balance of payments. That we were importing far more Chinese goods than they were importing American goods. Well, that was the whole premise for American business getting so actively involved with China, was to try to produce goods that had previously would have been produced in America, to produce them in China, to access cheap labor. It was always going to be an outcome of the relationship with China that we would have a negative balance of payments with them. I think the thing that happened was that China was so very good at what they were providing to us in terms of the service, providing all this manufacturing capacity, that the balance of payments deficit to them became very large. In fact, no one actually ever explained why it was so damaging to America to have a negative balance of payments, because in fact, it isn't a terminal problem for a country to have a negative balance of payments. The United States has had a negative balance of payments with the world for decades.
So here's what the issue is. China and U.S. point fingers at each other in disinformation blame game. We've heard nonstop our country's leaders, presidents and others, pointing the finger at China. What? China didn't create the finger pointing.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. I think what happened was that particularly Trump, what brought it to a head was that in order to justify tariffs, they couldn't just talk about solely this issue of balance of payments and the notion that we wanted to import less. We had to come up with pejoratives. We had to come up with arguments for why China was actually doing something nefarious so that we should bottle up and stop the importation of Chinese goods. So we began to theorize about the problems. And you know, the notion that, you know, the fact that they were leapfrogging ahead so quickly in technology caused us to argue that they were stealing technology. That again is not very soundly based in a lot of fact. If there was a lot of fact behind it, we'd see a lot of facts written about it. But the fact is that because of the tariff treaty and because of a lot of other things I've discussed before, we actually gave them access to our technology, and they were very facile and adept at using that technology to great advantage, but we gave it to them.
So we vilified them. You talked a week or two ago about us creating enemies. We've now created this enemy with China,
right,
even though we're stuck in a partnership with them that, you know, we can't separate ourselves from and never will be able to. Here's the article. China and the United States this week accused each other of spreading disinformation about the war in Ukraine. After Washington said Beijing has been repeating Russia's narratives throughout the conflict, a spokesperson for the Chinese Foreign Ministry described the U.S. on Tuesday as the greatest manufacturer of lies in response to a State Department report that highlighted the ways Beijing was backing Moscow by recycling the Kremlin's propaganda. The U.S. accuses China of helping Russia spread disinformation. This itself is classic disinformation, says Zhao. China has always been the victim of U.S. disinformation campaigns, from the so-called genocide to the Wuhan virus, from cyber attacks to overseas military bases. The U.S. has slung too much mud at China, he said. Beijing's grievances, according to Zhao, have only grown since Russia's war in Ukraine began. We all remember when senior officials at the White House National Security Council theorized in the media about China prior knowledge of the invasion. He said, without naming, Jake Sullivan, Joe Biden's national security advisor. Then an anonymous senior official claimed Russia had requested weapons, equipment, and other assistance from China. These revelations seem very vivid, but not one has been proved false. So here they are coming back at what we've been hearing nonstop and saying they can't back up any of those things they've been saying.
Well, I mean, the fact is that the United States has a problem with anyone who expresses any narrative associated with the Ukraine war that is contrary to America and NATO's line on it. I noticed that Pope Francis last week gave a speech in which he basically said that he thought the United States and NATO had played a significant role in creating the tension around Ukraine, which prompted the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, which sounds like the Russian narrative. It also sounds like something I've been saying.
Yes.
It also sounds like something that a fair number of American individuals who've been studying that region have said. So, you know, this notion of doctrinaire purity is something that America seems to insist upon, and we've always insisted upon it in foreign affairs. You know, America's got a line, everyone adopts it, or it's un-American. And China, I think, is maybe just calling us out on it, because I would agree with China that we've used doctrinaire kinds of statements that aren't necessarily based in fact as a way to stir up American opinion in a manner that's consistent with what we want. So that, for instance, the Trump administration decided that we wanted to fix up the balance of payments problem, but they had to come up with a bunch of pejorative things to say about China to justify imposing these tariffs, because tariffs, of course, increase the cost of things in the United States. Americans pay the price of tariffs. And, you know, I've explained that before.
Right.
Trump denied it, but every economist who looked at it said, yeah, Americans are paying these tariffs. So you need to explain to the Americans why you're doing it, and it apparently isn't just enough to say that it's for commercial reasons of improving the balance of payments. So what is it all about? Well, we had to come up with theories. And those theories tried to paint China as a villain. One of the interesting fallouts of the Ukraine war, I heard a discussion of this yesterday, is the fact that it's actually going to help China a great deal. Probably China's sitting on the sidelines. America's investing a great deal of money in Ukraine. America is causing prices to rise for energy and is causing a recession that's undoubtedly going to occur in Europe and in the United States. Now, it might bleed over to China, but one of the other effects of this is it's weakening the dollar. The dollar has already weakened materially against the ruble after the recovery actions taken by Russia. It's going to weaken, and undoubtedly over the long term, against the yuan. The European euro and the dollar are going to weaken against the yuan, and out of this is going to come a much stronger China, and including a stronger China with respect to the financial activities of the world, which could, in the long run, threaten the dollar as the world currency. So
Sandy, how long before the American people wake up and realize that we're being led around by the nose and just not thinking on our own, not even questioning any of these things, is going to impact and affect us mightily in the coming months and years, because we don't want to do the hard work of finding out whether or not these things that are being said are true.
Yes, and I think in the past, much of our foreign policy has not had a great deal of domestic impact. I think in this circumstance, I think the Ukrainian conflict and the fallout from it, which is going to be undoubtedly a recession that hits Europe and the United States, and in which the Ukrainian conflict, the shortages caused by it, the dislocations of supply of energy in particular, are going to have a long-term effect, might prompt the American public to say, you know what, we should probably be much more alert to, aware of, and involved with the formulation of foreign policy by the United States, because foreign policy has been the province of essentially institutions in the United States that are not controlled by or even visible to the American public. It's the State Department, it's the CIA, it's the institutions of government, it's private interests that are particularly interested in foreign policy, and we have foreign policy announced to us by the government. We don't formulate foreign policy.
So we'll be coming to the phone lines after the break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday. It's with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. The Earl Ingram Show, as always. You can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's still Fridays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone lines. Who do we have up, Sam?
Bill from Oconomowoc.
Hey, Bill, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Boy, you and Sandy are a top team. You got to win an award. You guys are so intellectual and so politically aware. I'm amazed.
The check is in the mail.
Anyhow, you know, you were talking about all the news and the bad news or the lies. The lies have cost us about 300,000 unnecessary deaths from COVID. They have cost us to put out guns like candy by fear. And if you want to prove the point of merit, challenge your listeners to call right-wing talk radio and see how fast they get on the air, if they get on the air, because they're going to be screened and it's got to be a topic that the host can handle. Unlike your station, Earl, where you call, and I welcome the CJs and all the opposition. because it's almost entertaining to listen to these people. There's no fact. There's no nothing. They just rely on emotion. But your station and Mike Crute, you're creating something special. I can see you guys have a syndication nationally like no other because you speak the truth. You have political awareness, and you have dignity. Thanks so much for what you do.
I also have something they don't have. You know what that is?
What?
Sandy Williams.
All right.
You're right. You're right.
There's no question.
You're right.
Thank you very much for the call. I really appreciate it. Sam, who do we have up next?
Eric from Tulsa.
Hey, Eric, how you doing, man? It's always good to hear from you. You say what?
Yeah, hi, Mr. Ingram. Hi, Mr. Williams. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'd just like to make a couple of points, and then, you know, we can chat or I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, no,
either
go
way.
Ahead.
I believe Tom has mentioned the immigration issue. And what's crazy is how they always want us to think that the migrants that come to this country all stay within a mile of the border and cause those states all kinds of problems, yet never highlight the fact that these, you know, preventing folks from traveling into our country hurts states like Wisconsin that are looking for work, that are looking for people that will do this work. They're coming here to do work, and they're not being allowed. So it's actually hurting our economy directly. And nobody ever brings that point up, obviously. Another thing I'd like to say is the Supreme Court ruling in 1973 actually created the right to individual privacy, I believe, not specifically abortion. And so we now have to consider all the other things of today's civil rights that are based on privacy that are going to be under attack next, which, you know, same-sex marriage, birth control, interracial marriages. They're discussing it all right now. And they're clearly not pro-life, but they're anti-choice. And the Democrats only don't raise this point more because they're afraid of losing the anti-choice members of their caucus, whereas the Republicans have weeded all those folks out by now. I also believe that, like we're talking about Iran's religious cabal, yet here in this, you know, in the land of the free, home of the brave, we've got five Supreme Court justices that are about to enforce their strict religious views on all of us. And how is this not a question of religion? A great point I heard the other day in regards to this is it illustrates the hypocrisy behind the anti-choice movement. Is when was the last time any of us were invited to a stillborn child's funeral? I'd like you to ask the anti-choice guests next week.
So hang on, because you're putting a lot out there, and I want Sandy to be able to respond, and you can have some dialogue with him. Sandy?
Well, you make good points all the way across the board, and you're right about Roe. I mean, Roe was the first case to decide that there was a right to privacy that was embedded in the 14th Amendment, and then it used that right to privacy as the basis for deciding that women had the right to abortions constitutionally. So it recognized a right to privacy and used that right as the basis for the decision. So you're right that if they're going to reverse the concept that there is such a right to privacy, then it will have an impact on all of the other decisions and rights that are based on that privacy right, because the Constitution doesn't use the word privacy. So it took until 1973 for the Supreme Court to decide that concept was embedded in the other words.
So what were some of the other? You had about four different.
The point about immigration to Wisconsin is a very good one, because I know that our agricultural workers in particular are largely immigrant labor, and the restriction on immigrant labor could have a significant impact on the agrarian part of our state economy. And furthermore, it's clear that, well, you know, the data is that the workforce of immigrants is a far younger cadre, like the data that was read by Earl earlier. And as our population materially ages, we end up with this problem of how do we support the retired baby boomers and the generation to follow them? How do we pay them Social Security? Who are the income earners that support them? And as the pyramid that used to exist when the baby boomers are at the bottom has now become inverted, upside down. And if we don't find a way to support them with new young workers, and that new young pipeline of workers is immigrants.
So hang on, because we
or unwanted babies.
Yeah, so hang on a second, because also, Sandy, we talked about this off the air. It's not just that these immigrants are going to come in and do the kind of jobs in restaurants and those, what is it? called the
service industry.
Service industry.
Right.
Major industry is going to need those bodies too, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, the IT personnel and the very, you know, the stream of immigrants isn't just from south of the border. It comes from all parts of the world, and that's always been the source of industry in the United States. And the notion that we should cut it off again is unbased on any factual reality. And so I agree that with Eric that what we need to do is press people for facts. Facts about what was the fraud in the election, facts about what's wrong with the immigrant workforce, and what are the factual bases for making this such a top issue.
Eric?
Yes, I agree completely in what you said, too, about them being young. We're not even considering the fact that some of these folks are going to arrive as children of migrant laborers, but yet grow up to be scientists and teachers and legislators.
Yeah, absolutely.
And really quickly, I'd like to say, you know, earlier you were talking about how society bears down and things like that. But I'd like to ask, because this is a common thread in conversations, it's the white innocence magic. Is that who is it that's actually doing the oppressing? Is it the black community? Is it the Latinx community? The Muslim community? Women? Of course not. You know, it's white, cisgender, Christo fascist men and women who seek to oppress, subjugate, and dominate anybody that doesn't look, live, or worship like themselves. And we never speak of that. It's always society, like it's some kind of a natural phenomenon that oppression occurs in this nature.
You know what your problem is? You were exposed to CRT. You were trained.
You mean the truth.
Critical race theory. The you spend too much time with that. Thank you very much.
My final question, Earl.
Okay, go ahead.
My final question I'd like to ask.
Mild attempt at humor, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, I get you. Of course. I appreciate that you recognize it.
Hey, go ahead. Go ahead quickly.
I'd really like you to ask that guest next week. And quietly, don't say anything about it, but spring the question on how many stillborn funerals did he attend last
week? Well, listen, you can call in. Go ahead.
Yeah, that sounds great, Earl. I would love to.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would love to.
Quickly,
I'll listen for
quickly.
It. My last question is, I've asked this for 20 years because we always hear this drumbeat of China. In all of human history, how many major wars has China started? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
All right. Got to go to a break. We got to go to a break. I'll let Sandy respond on the other side. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday. Sandy Williams, you can join us. We'll be right back.